Hello, brothers. Welcome back for another episode of The Gentleman's Journey. Once again, we are live from the 180th convention here at the Marriott Town Center in Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm here with yet another special guest and John Akins, class of 67 at Alpha Delta at the University of Georgia. John, how are you doing today, sir?
Very good.
It's great to have you. Did you have an okay trip in?
I did. Yeah. Good.
It's something about, we started off most of these from the convention series with just talking about the physical convention itself. This is my first one, as I mentioned in prior recordings. First one's a delegate also. Just to be here and to really feel the environment, it's been really neat already in these few days that I've been here. How many conventions have you been to? And I would love to hear about just what the convention means to you in general. I find that we all really do enjoy it in different ways, and you can really get some interesting answers there. So what do you think about the convention, John?
Well, this is just my second convention. I went to the convention a few years back at Rollins College in Orlando. That was my first.
Out from you.
And so far,
you dealt with
it. I've enjoyed the last night, the awards banquet. That was very well done, very inspiring. And it's just great to socialize with our active brothers from the Alpha.
I think so too. You know, as I discussed with you prior to this, it's definitely a convention. This project we're working on here, all these different things are just a way to bridge the alumni and the current actives. And I think that's so important, not just from a networking standpoint or dealing with professionalism, but I think just being able to sit down, have conversation with each other, mentorship, learning from others' previous experiences, I think it's really invaluable. And I think it's the best place to do it is at convention, I would say. So though it may be your second one and my first one, I hope there is many more to come. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of value that I just keep seeing throughout the weekend, and I bet you do as well. So first and foremost, just start me off with your early life. Tell me what leads you to Georgia, and then eventually we can start talking about what leads you into this brotherhood.
Well, I grew up in Georgia, South Georgia, Jessup, Georgia, to be exact, and really wanted to go UGA, but in retrospect, should have started at a smaller school with less temptation.
Okay.
Because it took me 5 years to get a four-year degree at Georgia. But I managed to struggle through. I majored in geography. And that's only because about my third year at Georgia, I took a geography course and made an A in it. Maybe it's the end of my second year. And that was the first A I'd had at UGA in school. So said, Eureka, this must be my calling. So I could major in geography, which I enjoyed, and still maintain and it didn't interfere with my fraternity life. And I could major in it, maintain a solid B minus average.
Sure.
But the bottom line, I wasted 5 years and a lot of money. Because I went to school rather than when I wasn't mature enough to really handle it.
Sure.
The smartest thing I did then was to, this was in the middle of the Vietnam War, was to join the Army. And I remember the recruiter telling me, Mr. Akins, we can make you an officer in 6 months. Great, where do I sign? So, but he forgot to tell me about basic training and advanced training. So basically 12 months later, I got my commission as a second lieutenant in the Army, and specifically artillery. And then I was then from there, Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and then from there assigned to El Paso, Texas, to Fort Bliss, which is the home of air defense artillery. And I received a Hawk missile air defense artillery training. And then from there, instead of Vietnam, where most of my classmates ended up going and some of them not returning, I ended up in Key West, Florida for 2 years in an air defense artillery battery. And that I was successful. Castro never landed in Key West. So I guess it was a successful time in my life. The bottom line is, seriously, the Army matured me, taught me, gave me discipline and really was a turning point in my life. Certainly not UGA, and it wasn't the fraternity. It was the U.S. Army. And I got out of the service in 1970. And the company, first company I went with was Pfizer, a pharmaceutical company. And they were looking specifically for military officers coming out of the Army or out of the service because of the training that they'd received, the discipline they exhibited. Mm. And so I spent 4 years in pharmaceutical sales and then switched over to medical diagnostics and then another 35 or so years in medical diagnostics, sales, marketing, and management, and then retired in 2010. Mm. But it was the U.S. Army that really shaped my life, the military, and the discipline that I acquired there.
So from listening to that back, you definitely say, obviously, the military was pivotal for you. Prior to that, during your undergrad experience, how, like, you do say that wasn't the turning point for you. How would you categorize it? You said, took me a while to finish, bare minimum, got through it.
Yep.
Tell me about your experience, like, with the fraternity while dealing with those other things involving academia.
Sure.
And all that nature.
Sure. Right now, let me start by saying I'm currently secretary of our large lodge corporation board. Mm. I'm advisor to our lodge manager. I oversee all of the maintenance and the projects at the lodge. And I spend a lot of time, effort, and a lot of my own money on the Alpha. Mm. And I do that because when I was at Georgia, when I was an active brother at Alpha Delta, I was a taker. I wasn't a giver. I didn't serve in any leadership capacities or any leadership positions. Very immature at that point in my life. I didn't contribute anything to the fraternity that I can recall other than dues and participation in the parties. So at this point in my life, having been away from the fraternity for 40 years, I really wanted to give something back to the fraternity. Mm. And now that I'm retired, I've been spent the last ever since I retired, 9 years, in a very active role with our Alpha, trying to give something to the fraternity. I really wasn't involved with the fraternity at all for 40 years. Mm. Left Georgia, got caught up in my career, both with the military and for a long time in healthcare. And then now that I realized that I had the time and the inclination to offer something back to the Alpha.
I don't like to toss around the word regret, failure, anything like that. We, mm-hmm. Again, in previous talks, a lot of our brothers have emphasized how these are lessons that we learn. And, you know, mm-hmm. though we all deal with a certain subset of obstacles, difficulties, challenges, being a gentleman, it can include failing, can include falling short. It's part of the human experience in general, makes us better people. Mm-hmm. Would you wish that you could have given more during those 4 years, or do you truly think you weren't able at that time to give?
I probably wasn't able. Mm-hmm. I was not mature. I recall being intrigued by it was three or four active brothers that we had in the fraternity at that time who had been in the service and had done their time in the service 3 or 4 years and then got out of the service and then went to college. And they had pledged Chi Psi. And they were serious kind of guys. You know, they studied all the time. They didn't party every night. They were much more mature, at least in my eyes. And I thought to myself many years later in life that, gosh, if I'd had only gone to the service first and then come back and gone to school at UGA and pledged to Kaisai, I think I would have been a different person, mm-hmm. maybe in a better position to contribute to the Alpha.
Sure. And I definitely think, though, and I'm not going to speak for you, of course, I definitely think just learning that along the way, no matter where that came in, mm-hmm. even though it seems like, in the grand scheme of things, it's out of order. You know, you wish you go to the service.
Sure.
You wish you can go to the Alpha next. You still find the right thing, and from a subjective viewpoint, you find it at the right time, regardless mm-hmm. of, you know,
sure.
how things may have seemed out of order. And I mean, that's why you're here today. That's why you're more hands-on. And now, would you say you feel like you're not, I don't want to say like, you know, fully invested, but would you feel way more capable and able to give time, services, effort, money, any of the above?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I learned to do a lot of things working with my dad. He was very much a hands-on guy, knew how to fix things, knew how to build things, knew how to manage projects like that. He was an engineer by trade, and I think that was one of the reasons he was such a do-it-yourselfer. And so I, rather than being able to go out and play with the kids, he had me working with him for years and years while I was living at home. So, and I hated that, but for the most part, I wanted to play with my buddies, my friends. But I learned a lot, didn't realize at the time. So now I'm using those DIY skills to help manage the lodge.
Sure.
I'm constantly fixing things, repairing things, installing things at the lodge, hand in hand with the lodge manager. And I am the point person with contractors when we have things that need to be done, or we're going to build something, have something built, or have something repaired. Mm-hmm. So, and that's all because of my earlier experience. So that in I'm giving back from that standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that makes me feel good.
And giving, I mean, everyone knows giving is quite rewarding if you really do think about it. And mm-hmm. giving to something, to a cause. And again, and I don't think we speak of charity here. I think we speak of, you know, this brotherhood, this organization, this thing that even though you weren't able to give back then, it gave to you still, regardless. Mm-hmm. You still met people, you still did things. Being able to give back to something that like brings you joy is even more rewarding. I feel like good for the soul.
Absolutely.
All of that. And I do feel like hearing your involvement with the lodge, whether it's repairing, it makes me want to ask you, like, how do you view the lodge even today? Because obviously, way back when, during your 4 years, I would assume your view of it now is much more different, especially being so directly involved, hands-on. how do you view the lodge beyond just brick and mortar?
Good point. Good question. I've shared with other alumni that that at UGA, the undergraduates, and more specifically the Active Brothers, are much smarter than we were when I came to UGA. In fact, anybody that applied virtually got accepted. Mm. Now, at top tier schools like UGA, you got to have a 4.0 average to get in. Well, I sure didn't have a 4.0 average. I couldn't get into Georgia now. But I've found that even though my Active Brothers are certainly smart and intelligent, there's some of them can be 19, 20-year-old knuckleheads, just like we were when we were their age. So intelligence and maturity don't necessarily go hand in hand. And so those of us who work closely with the actors realize that we were no different than they are now, and that if we recognize that, then we're prepared to cut them some slack, try and teach them something, help them learn, and that in itself is very, very satisfying.
Valuable, nonetheless. I think being able to be invested in that way. Because anyone, again, you can really think about it. There are certain things that we need as a collective body, money included, but there are things much more powerful and much more rewarding than money. And I'm sure as a man who's lived a fuller life than me, you know that the effort, time, you know, mentorship, all those things are so valuable, and giving back in that way, I think is equally, should be considered just as valuable as anything else. And I think that's where some emphasis should belong. You do talk about, obviously your undergrad experience in certain ways. And I think how you describe yourself and your own experience can be easily mirrored to a lot of guys today, not just in our own organization, but in a general fraternity. When people get into school and when they want to join a fraternity, they often want to, you know, party. They just pay their dues, kind of go, and then often guys fizzle out. They move on, and they either go inactive by junior, senior year, or they just stop coming to stuff and just pay their dues. What advice would you give to the gentleman I'm describing, people who are there, not really soaking it all up, and are kind of just, I would say, passing through kind of passively? What advice would you give those gentlemen as someone who's been through it and now knows what you know?
In other words, an active brother who chooses not really to actively participate in the Alpha?
Is exactly that what you're saying? Like that. Yes, sir.
Well, they can continue to pay their dues and attend meetings and go to parties, or they can turn in their badge. I mean, they have a choice of one or the other. I don't know that at that point in their life they have, unless they're counseled and there's a reason why they've taken a passive approach to their membership. They probably don't want to do any more than they're doing now.
Sure. I've always thought if you seek this out, and I mean, obviously in your days, you know exactly what I'm referring to when I say like our values, who we are, what we abide by, what we're anchored to. What if you are aware of what that is and what we stand for? I mean, you might as well just not go for a badge in the first place. Just join another fraternity, because there's plenty out there that just want to party and just want to kind of make a few friends or have those connections. And that's okay. I'm not hating on anyone that wants to do that. There's no reason to ostracize those who want that, but you should be upfront that you want that instead, you know, because and that doesn't mean people don't go through things or people don't want certain things. Again, you realize later on after going through the military and after serving exactly who you were, who you wanted to be, who you were striving to be. And now in your older years, you give back that way. And that's not as a form of reconciliation or retribution, but because you know you can. And I think that's much, much different. Who would you say has impacted your life the most?
During what period of my life?
Any that you're comfortable sharing with. And it can be personal, professional, family, friend, just someone you met on the street. I mean, I don't know. Just as someone who has impacted your life profoundly up until this point.
Probably at different stages of my life, different people impacted me.
Sure.
And I would say at, you know, kind of, didn't accomplish much in high school and didn't really, I wasn't any more mature then than later. But I think the first person that really got my attention and made me sit up and think and maybe sit up and look at people differently was Drill Sergeant Allen. This was my first day at basic training in Fort Leavenworth, Missouri. And to give you some perspective, I came from a little town in South Georgia called Jessup, Georgia. It's not a backward town, it's just deep south. I had no experience with blacks. Other than see them on the, they stayed in their part of town, and I had no I had never talked to any of them, never met any of them. Sergeant Allen was the most professional person, black or white, I think I'd met up until that point. And if you, you may be too young to remember the movie, An Officer and a Gentleman, and Lou Gossett Jr. was the drill sergeant in that movie. And he was sharp as a tack. And that was Sergeant Allen. He certainly spoke better English than I did. And he was really, really sharp, smart, and very, very objective. He didn't show any deference to the other black soldiers in our basic training company any more than the whites. It's very fair. And for 8 weeks in basic training, I was in awe of him. So at that stage in my life, I think that was a turning point in my perception of people with Sergeant Allen.
Did you guys maintain a relationship following leaving the service?
No.
No?
But no. Never. After, not even after basic training.
Never forgot him, though?
Never forgot him. No. He had his next group of raw recruits he had to turn into men in 8 weeks. So, and then after that was officer candidate school, 6 months at Fort Sill, Oklahoma. And I remember our TAC officer, Lieutenant Shrewsbury, who had just come back from Nam. He was, he had a maturity about him that I was in awe of. He'd seen a lot that we hoped we would never see. And then after that, it was the various people that I reported to in the 4 or 5 companies that I worked for.
Sure.
During my career in healthcare.
Is there something, just because, you know, I come from a military family. My dad served in the Navy for 15 years. Was there something about basic that just stood out to you, something you remember? Everyone has some type of experience they describe today, whether it's, you know, going through the chamber with the special type of toxin or gas in there, or it's getting OC sprayed in the face or anything like that. Did you have anything like that you held on to?
Well, sure. You went through the gas chamber exercise. I think that that people that went through basic training and OCS, you came away from all of that experience with a better appreciation for what you were capable of surviving and capable of dealing with. Well, certainly not in basic training and advanced training, but if you got to OCS and it was getting too much for you, you could leave. You could raise your hand and leave. We started with 120 officer candidates and graduated a little over 60, so about a 50% attrition rate. But you either dug deep and told yourself you're going to stick it out to the end, or you raised your hand and said, I want out. So I think that was a point in my life when I realized that, hey, I might have a chance here.
You obviously talk about how you learn a significant amount of value in the military. And obviously, very similar values to what we carry here as Kaisai gentlemen and things we promote here. What's a virtue or a value that really stuck from the moment you entered into the service on?
Discipline.
Discipline?
Absolutely. Discipline to to finish the job, commit to a job and finish it, and being willing to step up and work with others and get the job done.
Sure.
And I see that in many of the actives who have that that inner discipline, and many of those step up and become members of the executive council.
Mm-hmm.
That sense of responsibility and maturity and determination. So, and then others that, good guys, happy-go-lucky, having a good time, managed to make it through, through 4 years. But, you know, you concern yourself that they haven't reached that level of maturity yet and hope that they do.
Sure.
In some form or fashion.
As you know, whether it's pertaining to the military, this brotherhood we share, mm-hmm. we promote ideals of collectivism, the idea that we're all one and that we move together, we do things together. As a man who's been in several companies, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, whether it's governing bodies here or just our own separate alphas, we all have to be together if we want things to work. It's like many cogs in a clock. Moving together, you know, eating together, encouraging one another, any of the above. Mm-hmm. And I think that everyone knows that part of the reason we do that is because we're refining each other's weaknesses, we're holding each other up, but we also have certain strengths. Every man has strengths, every man has weaknesses. What are some of your strengths? And then on the other end, what are some of your weaknesses?
Mm-hmm. I'm willing to accept responsibility, mm-hmm. And I'll work hard to accomplish what I accept responsibility for, what I volunteer for, and in a timely manner. And I think timeliness is an important trait in a gentleman.
Sure.
And I think that in terms of areas of improvement, weaknesses, having a little more tolerance maybe for some of the guys who maybe didn't have fathers that have taught them some life skills.
Sure.
Some of the boys that have never picked up a shovel or pushed a lawnmower, or but I do my best to recognize that maybe they didn't have a father like me, like I did, and or don't have a father like I did to teach them those kind of things. So I strive to try and teach them how to mow the yard.
We have a side yard. It probably takes 6 trips to go up and down. So I haven't really had to learn too much, but I'll see guys out there for hours doing it. And I'm just like, I can't imagine that, but definitely just listening, patience, understanding, I think are very tough things at times to do, especially when it feels like people are, you know, persecuting you, or it feels mm-hmm. like you're having to deal with the ramifications of whatever these people are bringing forth. It's hard at times, but a part of, you know, what we do, part of us being gentlemen, is not only being understanding but forgiving as well, because mm-hmm. We aren't perfect. This fraternity collectively is not perfect, and I think it's important to dismiss the idea that we're always going to be trending upwards, or that we're always going to be in a really good place. The whole, what makes a good place special is that we're sometimes in bad places, and that we are able to work through that together. So moving into these last few questions, you have spoken about your various talents, placements during your lifetime and careers, different areas, whether it was military, pharmaceutical sales. What's something you really wish you would have known at the start of your career? Because I feel like a lot of people
Our brothers included are starting to enter that realm where they're looking for, you know, their first job, they're looking for their big break when it comes to employment, and they're getting into something, but they would need to know like what they need to do. And of course you, a man who's been through it, knows that kind of thing. So what's one thing you wish you would have known during when you started your career?
Before I started my career in healthcare?
It could be military, healthcare, either one. Just before you started actually actively working in whatever field you choose.
See, I'm not sure. I really didn't have a plan. And maybe had I had some career counseling, it might have pointed me in the same direction. I don't know. I kind of stumbled into healthcare industry through the back door, having had that military experience, and that's what they happened to be looking for at the time. And then, but after about, I guess about 7-8 years, maybe more like, seven, 8 years later, I was in St. Louis, had been promoted out of the field to national accounts manager, and then into marketing, and then realized that a degree in geography isn't going to get you very far in business. So I went back to school at University of Missouri in St. Louis and got my MBA. And so that was, again, what one of the, that was a career-changing event or a period of my life. Having that MBA was an eye-opening experience. Plus, it was a good insurance policy. It helped me get that next job that I really wanted. So.
You correct me or clarify if I'm wrong. So you think specializing in a certain area, an area in demand, whether it comes to getting your degree in a certain area or just pursuing a certain field with certain skill sets, you think making sure you're set or honed on the right thing is the way to go?
Yeah, I think getting a professional counseling,
of course,
career counseling would have been helpful. As it turned out, I leveraged my people skills and my military experience to get into healthcare sales and marketing, and so I kind of lucked out there.
Sure.
I didn't have a technical degree, but didn't need one at that point. So I think it's probably a good investment in time.
And you say investment. College has become, in general, especially as the years have gone on, a very interesting, uncertain investment. When you really think about the power of the degree, it's really succumbed to just a paper signed by your dean and that hangs on your wall. And if you're not picking an area that's needed, if you're not picking an area that's in high demand, it's almost right, like you're just tossing over $100,000 down the toilet. And I think, again, and I'm not putting down anyone who has certain professions or certain ambitions they want to pursue, but if you're legitimately thinking that you want to get a certain type of job and you're pursuing a degree that has really, one, no investment or no return on your investment
right,
in a certain amount of years, or two, jobs that just aren't readily available, it's basically like you're just burning the money. So I really do think that's important. And mm-hmm. it may sound boring for people to like just get, oh, a business degree or oh, this or that, but the value of the degree is changing. And if you're going for some really specific area like that, you better hope you're going back for a PhD, a doctorate, a master's,
that's right,
anything in that area, and then you can spend on much more money to go with it. I mean, even professional pursuit for schools, like, I mean, even law now, an investment in law school is risky if you don't do it in the right area. Mm-hmm. You may not see a return for many, many years. You may not be able to pay off your loans if that's what you had to take out for many, many years. So I think focusing is definitely very, very important.
Sure. Got to be pragmatic about your future.
You do have to be pragmatic. Sure.
But maybe they don't recognize it, and that's where a professional could help them. Mm-hmm. Recognize that they have strengths and abilities and an inclination in one area versus another, but that area is much more likely to give them not only job satisfaction, but allow them to build some personal wealth at the same time.
Sure. Getting into these last two, if you could go back and meet anyone, dead or alive, or you had the opportunity to meet anyone, who would it be and why?
Don't know. I'm not much of a historian.
Surely there's got to be someone that somewhat interests you.
I've never really thought about that much. I think that I look at some of my relatives. That maybe had served in the Civil War. I know one, my great-great-grandfather, lost a leg at Shiloh and managed to, with the help of crutches, walk all the way to southern Louisiana, where that part of the family started. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to meet some of my past relatives who had it a lot tougher than I did, but managed to achieve greatness, at least in my eyes.
Sure.
But no one particular.
So a lot of
hero.
A lot of people go for the fame route or something like that, or they want to meet like someone who like the world knows. But some people like it's family. Like I know there's a ton of people who wish they could meet some of their deceased relatives, like you talked about. And there's like people they never got the chance of meeting.
Yeah.
I know that's been big in my house recently. One of our brothers is the CEO of Ancestry DNA, as you may know. We just sent in one of those kit things. And I'm finally going to see like what the actual percentages are for where we're from. I would love to meet like my family that actually immigrated over here and that kind of thing. So that's fascinating. Now this last one is a silly one, like we've done for everyone else. So if, again, you are a man with combat and weapons training, assume you're unarmed, how many lemurs would it take to take you down?
How many what?
Lemurs, the animal.
To take me down?
Yes, like to the ground and have you pinned. How many lemurs would it take to take you down?
That's a bizarre question.
Is it too bizarre though?
It is.
Okay.
It is.
That's fair. That's valid. But you got to say a number, or you could just say, you and I hate you, leave me alone, this interview's over, and you could walk out.
Oh, I think it's probably just one lemur.
One lemur? They're not that big.
I know, but you know, if he bites you in the right spot, he can take you down.
Okay. So the answer is one lemur. John, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
For those of you who are watching this, thank you so much for watching. We will have one release in due time. Thank you for being here. I hope you have a great week and God bless. Thank you.